to make sure my cough, I can feel a cough coming at the worst possible time. We want to get that cough out of the way. Hello and welcome to episode 46 of Great Things with Great Technology, the podcast highlighting companies doing great things with great tech. My name's Anthony Spiteri, and in this episode, we're talking to a company that is a market-leading software-defined storage vendor, offering reliable and speedy storage platforms with a focus on low latency throughput. They cover public and private cloud platforms, servicing cloud and service providers, as well as enterprise and SaaS vendors and much more. That company is Storepool, and I'm talking to Bojan Krasnov, Chief Product Officer and co-founder at Storepool. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
All right. So, Bojan, just before we get into software-defined storage 2.0 and, you know, some of the great things around storage, which we love talking about on the show, I just want to give a quick shout out to the show. If you like great things with great tech and would like to feature in future episodes, you can click on the link on the show notes or go to gtwgt.com, the brand new website, and register your interest. Just as a reminder as well, all episodes of GTWGT are on all good podcasting platforms, Google, Apple, Spotify, all hosted and distributed by anchor.fm. That'll keep you busy with all the previous episodes. Link and subscribe and alert so you get all future episodes as well. Okay, with that out of the way, Bojan, let's talk about Storepool. And you know, just kicking off, it's a company that's was founded in 2011 by yourself and two other co-founders, both of which, two of which have the same first name as I've seen, and then Yanko. So maybe just talk a little bit about yourself and what led up to you three coming together to found the company.
Yeah, so back in 2011, we were trying to sell a different product in the space of packet processing, software-defined networking, before it was known as software-defined networking.
Okay, yeah.
And that product was kind of in the space of DDoS protection, firewalls, traffic optimization, things like that. We were talking to different service providers, banks, etc. And in the service provider space, in the hosting industry, we found this need. They all wanted, many people we talked to wanted to be like DigitalOcean and kind of provide public cloud services and hosted virtual machines, VPSs, etc.
Yeah.
And they told us that they couldn't, kind of the one piece of that puzzle they couldn't solve was the storage backend for virtual disks.
Yep.
For these virtual machines. They told us they talked to all the major vendors and no one could give them a solution that did the job. Came back to the office in front of a whiteboard, drew up an architecture of how we could solve it based on our packet processing background.
Okay.
So kind of very using approaches that were common in packet processing at the time, but were not at all used in storage yet.
Interesting, okay.
And a few years later, so it took a few years to kind of stabilize and solve additional problems that we couldn't foresee, because this is, again, Storepool is the first distributed system that we were involved in. The previous solution was a single node solution.
Okay, yeah.
Took a few years to get it in place and get the first production deployments, etc. And a few years later, we became kind of profitable, cash flow positive. Along the way, we attracted a couple of investors. Very kind of, if you compare it to kind of Silicon Valley scale investment, these are really small investments.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I did a bit of research on that. I think from memory, 250 million or something roundabout. Was that the number? Or I saw on Crunchbase, I think it was listed as a couple of rounds of investment, but still nothing to not shout about.
Maybe $1 million total investment.
Okay, yep.
So it's like a tenth of a Series A.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That some of our competitors get. During this time, so the space of software-defined networking, there were many tens of companies funded and
yes.
acquired and went defunct and acquired, et cetera, et cetera.
Nicira being the biggest sort of darling case in network-defined storage or network software-defined networking. So you pivoted, right? So it's really interesting that you went from this, you know, this network solution where you were working on that. Yeah. You saw an opportunity in the market that was there for the taking with regards to storage. And, you know, in my background, I previously chatted to you just as we were starting the show, just talking about my background in service provider land and the pain that I went through, you know, trying to get the right storage platform. And actually, as coincidence would happen, I think about 2011, 2013, that's absolutely when I was in the thick of it, working for a service provider, trying to move from those more monolithic architectures that were in place by the major vendors to ones that promised a more scalable, performant deployment. And for the majority, and I went through some big scars in that time, working through over promises, under-delivered solutions, and just issues all around. So you guys pivoted quite well to a space that I think needed to be filled. And, you know, 2013 to 2017, you talk about shipping product and becoming profitable in that space. I mean, who were you targeting specifically at the time? And we'll talk about the architecture later, but how did you get from concept to first production to profitability in what is really quite a short time?
Yeah, so we started the first kind of design and architecture of the solution were based around the requirements of particular hosting companies that we were talking to at the very beginning. And based mostly focusing on this single use case, which is virtual disks for virtual machines, right? In the KVM stack, because kind of these kinds of companies mostly use Linux and mostly use KVM as the
hyperscaler. Okay, yeah.
From there, in terms of features and kind of different capabilities of the product, it grew into with our actually very first production customer, we figured out we need integrations with cloud management platforms that kind of making block storage available in a cloud environment, in the cloud management platform, we figured out it's part of what we deliver. It's not like something that the service provider solves on themselves. It's part of the solution, the integration into OpenStack, CloudStack, OpenNebula, etc.
Yeah, right. Which I know well, and actually I've had a few of those on this show. In terms of talking to those particular companies. So there's a good tie together here. Just quickly, in terms of block storage, so and we'll talk about the architecture later, but is StorePool primarily built upon and offering block storage, or is there other protocols?
So it's a block storage solution, quite scalable and mostly kind of geared towards dynamic provisioning, dynamic operations. So creating many volumes and deleting them continuously.
Okay,
so
yeah.
Every time a customer comes to the service provider and provisions a new VM, that comes along with, a clone of a operating system image for that particular virtual machine. And this is something that goes on all the time, right?
Yeah.
So it's block storage, but not your sysadmin driven, the sysadmin goes in a UI and it's a one type of use case, but in a dynamically provisioned use case. In terms of protocols, it's mostly used with StorePool's own proprietary protocol for Linux.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the StorePool client for Linux, but it's also used by maybe 10-20% of our customers with iSCSI.
I got iSCSI, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and our iSCSI implementation is iSCSI is kind of often associated with poor performance. It depends on the implementation quite a lot.
Yeah, exactly. I know very well, and I was a big fan of iSCSI, even over Fiber back in the day. I'm a number one iSCSI fan. So, I like the fact that this is iSCSI as well.
Yeah. And we haven't, in terms of file and object, like delivering different storage services on top of the storage platform, we haven't gone into that space. We are considering some things there.
Yep.
And so we're focusing on dynamically provisioned block storage with a lot of kind of capabilities and functionalities around that. So things like snapshots, shipping snapshots to different locations for, say, DR or backup.
Yeah.
Space efficient cloning. So if you have a common use case in clouds is you have a virtual machine image and you want, say, 1,000 VMs of the same VM image. And this is something we support quite well.
Yeah. And that also lends itself to, obviously, I know that you cover containerization, Kubernetes and whatnot. So that lends itself beautifully there to that sort of dynamic, ephemeral sort of nature of that platform. So let's spend some time talking maybe about the differentiator of the architecture, because you kind of position yourself as an SDS 2.0, so software defined storage 2.0. So I think that's a good thing, because the original generation of SDS did have problems. So, you know, what's SDS 2.0 from your point of view, and what's the sort of high level architecture of the actual store pool solution?
Look at two different sides of it. One is in terms of the architecture of the solution and the requirements towards the underlying hardware. So if you have a software-defined storage solution that requires that you buy a particular, NIC from a particular vendor for it to work, a lot of the kind of new NVMe over fabrics, high-performance type of solutions require a particular NIC from a particular vendor. Then this limits your, as a customer, it limits you quite a lot. You can't kind of take the usual server you usually buy from your usual vendor and use that in the SDS solution. One of the things we do is we try to be as widely compatible as technically possible, right? So it doesn't matter if your NIC is from Intel or from Broadcom or from Mellanox or whoever. It doesn't matter if your SSD is from Samsung or from Micron or from any of the vendors we supported. It doesn't matter if your server is from Dell or from Supermicro or whoever. It's on the compatibility list.
Yeah. So you're properly agnostic to the hardware.
Yeah. And we don't do everyday research into our competitors, but from what we've seen, they require most of them require some peculiar kind of hardware. For example, some of them require persistent memory or another type of NVMe solution as a mandatory requirement for you to deploy the solution. In Storpool, we support it. It's an option. You get the benefits, but it's not mandatory. Right. So this is one direction. Another is architecture. So Storpool is a scale-out solution, which means for us, it means you're able to, as a customer, you're able to expand your storage system seamlessly. You add another storage node, or you add a bunch of drives in the existing storage nodes or HCI nodes. Over time, you may retire old hardware and bring new hardware into the same cluster, etc. When you bring new hardware into a cluster, you get the benefit of this additional hardware into the cluster immediately. So you don't. And in some solutions, you bring new hardware, and that only brings capacity. It doesn't add performance, for example. In Storpool, when you add and storage node, it also adds to the performance of the pool.
Okay, so obviously, so we've got we wouldn't call them they're purpose servers that people can buy their choice. Does it run on any flavor of Linux? I mean, is there supportability for most Linux distros that are common? And then do you plug into the kernel, or do you sit somewhere else within that path?
So Linux distros, we support Red Hat and Red Hat derivatives. So it used to be CentOS, but CentOS 8 is now gone, and now other distributions are coming to take its place. Alma Linux being the most popular one of the Red Hat derivatives.
Mm-hmm.
Oracle Linux is also on that list. And on the Debian side, we support Ubuntu. At the moment, it's three different long-term LTS versions of Ubuntu.
Yeah.
We go back to Ubuntu 11. We just recently stopped support for Ubuntu 16.
Okay.
Which is like 6 years old now.
Right? Yeah.
So we go about 5 to 6 years back on the most popular Linux distributions. And it's fairly easy to add support for an additional Linux distro if there is a business case for it. But we don't see the business case. In terms of kernel, there are parts, small parts of Storpool which are delivered as kernel modules. So we build for every build and test against both the upstream Linux kernel and all the new and exciting things that come up with that, as well as distribution kernels. Mm-hmm. So if you're most common case is if you're using Ubuntu or a Red Hat derivative, the kernel that comes from the distribution, by the time you install it, we already have support for it. Okay. So there is some automated CI behind the scenes that does that.
Yeah, good stuff. And you mentioned performance, obviously. It's linear. From what I'm reading, linear performance, right? If you add another node, you get more performance. Or is it linear or exponential? What type of performance are you getting out of it? It's linear. Yeah, linear. All right, it doesn't degrade.
In scale out systems, sorry to interrupt you. In scale
that's
out
okay.
systems, getting close. So linear is ideal. Getting close to linear is quite rare.
Yeah.
Most scale out systems give this kind of fall off.
Depreciating. How do you achieve that? So what's at a high level, because I know that comes down to performance methodology, but how is that achieved at a linear rate?
So one important in distributed architectures, in scale out architectures, a very important part is generally speaking, read operations are easy. So read operations, you can scale very well. If you think of database scalability, you would have your master database and you can have as many slaves as you want, and you would scale read operations on these. So it's similar in storage systems. Write operations are hard though. So again, from the database example, you have a master database and many slaves, that doesn't increase your write throughput. You still have only one master. And the way Storpool does that, the way we scale write performance is by having a parallel multi-master system. So different every storage operation is completed without any coordination between nodes, and it only touches the three nodes that keep the three replicas of that write operation.
Okay.
So it's to get to that point, there are a lot of unique and fairly complex distributed systems to solve, and we've solved them a long time ago.
That's your intellectual sort of benefit, right? Yeah. You guys are done, right? That's what makes you guys stand out. So, you've got a VM or a workload that's running on a particular host. The data though could be effectively on any host in a cluster, triplicated for resiliency three times.
When you provision a volume, that volume is not on a particular set of say three drives. It's the volume is provisioned on the pool, and pieces of that volume end up on different drives. So the load associated with that volume, and there are some exceptions, I can talk about them, but the load associated with that volume ends up being spread across all the drives, because the logical space of the volume, the virtual LBAs of the volume are spread across many drives in the system.
Yeah.
And
so to get performance, and obviously CPU comes into play a little bit, I'm guessing, in terms of scalability. What about the networking though? Because I feel like once you've got a distributed system, the network is so important. So how do you deal with that, knowing that your customers aren't going to all have the same back-end networking, the same technologies, the same interconnects, that sort of thing?
We have a minimum supported network. which is dual redundant 10 gigabit.
Okay.
We don't support anything slower than 10 gigabit. And in the beginning, it was actually kind of a major bottleneck to our rollout, to getting new customers, because very few people.
Yeah, back then, 2011, 2013, there's people with 10 gig, but not that many. Yeah.
At that time, it was kind of, we were teaching a lot of people how to do this cost effectively. And part of that was even getting like a second Kent InfiniBand 40 gig gear, which was very cheap at that time for some reason. So the minimum support is dual 10 gig. Dual 10 gig is roughly equivalent to 2000 megabytes per second.
Okay.
So, which is a lot of throughput, and it's it's not a lot of throughput, but it's enough throughput for many use cases.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And then that scales with number of storage nodes. So if you have a 10 node system, each on dual 10, that's a 20 gigabyte per second total system.
Yeah.
How many IOPS you could do on that? It mostly depends on the storage devices you have on the backend. The network may become a bottleneck for small kind of 4K operations, but generally, it isn't.
So how do you balance that out? I mean, obviously there's trade-offs, performance, throughput, latency, that sort of thing. There's always a trade-off at some point. That classic triangle, you can have two out of the three. So, but I know that you guys focus on the latency and the performance, super low latency, I'm at 0.1 or 0.2 millisecond from memory is what I kind of saw where you play. So a lot of what you talk about, you are very proud of the fact that you guys can be the best at that particular latency level for the workloads that you're doing. Because in my experience, having been a customer who's been overpromised particular performance and latency values, when you're initially doing that load test, or when you're doing the burn-ins, it's kind of like an artificial scenario, right? Mm-hmm. It's not real world. So of course things are going to look okay. But from what I understand, you guys have been really, really big on making sure that your benchmarking that leads to your performance metrics are real world. Explain that a little bit.
So two things. One is how we achieve this, that there is some kind of fairly unique technology installed on that front. So we, in terms of overall efficiency, so how much CPU time does it take to process a storage operation? That's what drives it. Because if you have very little CPU time spent on a single operation, then you can achieve the kind of 100 microsecond level of latency, because it takes a few microseconds in a few places to process. And then the remaining latency is from how much time does it take the NVMe drive to answer, and how much time does it take to send 4 kilobytes of data over the network, right? It just adds up to about 100 microseconds, that ballpark. And so there is kind of a optimization implementation component of it, of how we achieve this. And then on the how we drive this forward, as you mentioned, we don't just run kind of a synthetic benchmarks. We try to, so we both, part of our business is ongoing monitoring of production clusters. So we have this managed service, and we have visibility over hundreds of deployments of Storpool and see how they behave in production.
Yep.
And another part of it is running kind of application benchmarks on top of full stack deployments. So you have like a PostgreSQL database in a KVM virtual machine on a compute node attached to a Storpool storage system. And this is the, like we look at how many transactions per second can the Postgre database do, which does not always directly translate into, having more IOPS gives you more transactions per second.
So with that, I mean, and I want to talk about your particular customer base. I think obviously you've done very well from the looks of it in the service provider, managed service provider world. You mentioned, the continuous improvement process, your remote monitoring. Is that the biggest differential that you'd say, you know, in terms of how you guys have become successful? Is because number one, you've got an software defined. It gives flexibility of choice to your customers. You've kind of got the right balance of offering performance versus latency and throughput, and then the resiliency seems to be sorted as well through the distributed system as well. So you're ticking all the boxes. What's your typical customer, and have you had that success in the managed service provider space because of all that I've just mentioned?
So typical customers of Storpo are managed service providers, cloud service providers, and I would kind of bulk them together and say other private cloud deployments. Mm-hmm. In the private cloud deployments, there is a mixture of kind of small enterprise and software as a service companies that use it for, say, their test and dev environment or for their production environment on-prem, et cetera, many service providers and cloud service providers choose us. They come from different backgrounds. Some compare us against like storage appliances from the likes of Pure Storage and NetApp. Others compare us against other software-defined storage systems. And we win because of lower TCO, higher performance from the same set of hardware, flexibility in terms of, in a lot of cases, they have like a deployed base fleet of servers and they want to use the asset they already have instead of buying new servers. Yeah. And we can accommodate that. Neither the pure storage and NetApps can accommodate that, and most software-defined storage systems.
Yeah, that's almost counterintuitive to their business model, right? In terms of shipping software and hardware.
Even the software-defined storage systems tend to kind of heavily lean on shipping new appliances.
Yeah, they'll partner with a hardware vendor like Dell or HPE or whatever, and have that as part of the deal.
Performance, cost, flexibility, and what you mentioned, the managed service. So we provide both like metrics collection and monitoring system, as well as the service behind it. So looking at the alarms that you have to them.
Okay. Have you guys got a cloud platform or a SaaS platform that manages everything in, and you guys have got the operators doing the work there? Yeah. Okay. I've always wondered, how does that scale like for you guys at the back end as a business? Like, how do you, because obviously I'm guessing you don't charge extra for that. Is it part of the service or do you charge a bit extra for it? Yeah. So it's interesting that it works, but obviously people love that as being part of that whole end-to-end solution, because then as someone like me who was an operator at the back end, manage these platforms, I've got full trust that you guys are managing, looking after this thing, and also being proactive in your monitoring and analytics and maybe giving us little hints as to how we would tweak this, fix that.
There's a lot of, because of the managed service approach, there is also a lot of immunization, let's call it. So if we see a problem in one deployment, we can take that learning and apply to all deployments.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, it's a good way to describe it.
So how we scale it? First, the level of efficiency we can get from managing hundreds of deployments, the level of operational efficiency, how many people we need to support one. From managing hundreds of deployments is an order of magnitude better than our customer hiring like a storage expert.
Yeah.
So it does need more people as we grow. Mm-hmm. Need more sysadmins or DevOps people in our operations or support team. But it's another magnitude smaller than the people that our customer needs to hire.
Yeah, that's a beautiful explanation of it. Actually, it fully makes sense.
And there's still a lot of things to improve. There's still a lot of, processes that, a particular step needs to be done. We need to add a storage node to an existing cluster. And that takes several hours of work. And we work on improving our efficiency even more. And at the end, it seems for us at least, it seemed the bottleneck is communication with the customer. It's not actually doing the technical steps.
Yeah, okay, yeah, so I get that.
Most of the technical steps can be automated, but kind of collecting the data you need and customer asks a question and you need to figure out what the question is and how to respond to it and write the response. That's the bottleneck of this.
Yeah,
this kind of service, it seems.
Interesting. I just want to kind of change tack a little bit and talk about, you know, the fact that, you know, you talked about KVM quite heavily, and what I've been seeing in the past maybe 12 months is that KVM, Red Hat based hypervisors, are making a very strong push to sort of replace and displace the traditional VMware and Hyper-V stacks out there. So obviously, and I think there's certain demographics and countries and regions that push that more than others, but those new age IT stacks as they sit, so not just KVM, not just their open source stuff, but also Kubernetes and containerization, how are you guys going to obviously evolve to be able to support that more broadly as they become more widely used? But also, I guess a lot of your customers would still be on the traditional vSphere, right? So yeah, how do you see that whole new age IT stack?
We come from the other end of it, so for us it's mostly KVM and a small fraction of VMware.
Yeah,
we're trying, we're growing both, actually, both in terms of KVM, cloud stack, open stack deployments, as well as a few vSphere deployments. We are already, so there are other storage solutions that are already integrated in the right places, in, say, OpenStack and Kubernetes. Yeah. We also are, we have kind of dedicated resources to continue developing these hooks into the ecosystem. So in open source, it's very, they call it the bazaar approach. There are many different solutions to the same problem.
Okay, yep.
And
you see that in the ecosystem of the open source ecosystem, the cloud native, there's tons of solutions there to do the one thing. Yeah.
Which means if we had to support vSphere, we would only have one place to integrate into. If we had, because we support KVM, we need to, in order to kind of cover all the different scenarios, we need to support an OpenStack and CloudStack and OpenNebula, and we're thinking about adding one more integration.
Okay. Broad. Yeah, it's a broad spectrum to support, which, you know, can I see that as being a difficult, but also I see it as being a massive positive for you, because the choice that you offer to your customers is so broad. And it's, you're not pigeonholing yourself in that vSphere world, in that Kubernetes world, in the open. Yeah. So I think it's a really good tick there. In terms of the future of, you know, because obviously we talk a lot about on-premises, you've talked about your customers being service providers, managed service providers, private clouds. How are you seeing this, you know, competing with the public cloud platforms? Because obviously, and I know that there's been a bit of a pushback of late from people going to public cloud, people are going back on-prem, the hybrid world is very much the way of the future. But, you know, how do you talk about someone who comes to you and goes, oh, I can get better performance and scalability on an RDS instance in AWS as an example?
Maybe. So if they believe that, it's likely they're not kind of an ideal customer for Storpool. So there is kind of one attractor of hyperscale public clouds like AWS Google Cloud and Azure, etc., mainly the big ones, is the kind of very large portfolio of services that they have and they maintain, they develop over time. RDS is a good example of this. There isn't, at least I haven't found, a good on-prem alternative to RDS. Maybe you can go to a database vendor like, say, Oracle or Percona or someone else, Enterprise DB, and get a service from them to manage your databases.
Yeah. Right,
on-prem, in virtual machines on-prem. Because RDS is that, it's like a managed database in a virtual machine on AWS.
That's it. There's always something. There's always a computer or a service behind it that's doing serverless as such. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe you can kind of, as an enterprise, maybe you can assemble that one service by using a vendor that provides a managed service for databases. But the portfolio of services of AWS, it's hundreds of services, right? You can't just kind of assemble them and do it on your own. So that's a very big differentiator of public clouds, which is hard to replicate on-prem. It's kind of what you lose by moving to on-prem. What you gain is cost advantages, especially if the public cloud operator doesn't optimize for your specific use case.
Yeah.
So if you have anything that's not kind of very extremely standard, you would be able to get several times lower TCO by doing it with a customized solution in your data center. It doesn't need to be in your office, obviously, but in a co-located space or by leasing servers instead of getting a service from a public cloud. So kind of TCO for a lot of use cases that don't peak, use cases that are kind of base load use cases that have continuous load, on-prem is going to be cheaper.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. So, I mean, typically you guys are doing so well, though. If I look, in the last sort of 2 years, you've won a number of different awards. Even as far back as 2017, you were the one to watch product storage awards. I've got these listed out here. I think it's really important because I think it just backs up the credibility for you guys over the past 10 years of existence, right? You've got storage transformation projects. In 2022, you're a name one of Europe's fastest growing companies, which is pretty crazy in itself when you think about it. And then I think your numbers came out for last year, 30% year-on-year growth for 2021. That's significant growth, right, for a 11-year-old company. So obviously, that matches up what I see, I think, in terms of the thirst for a different type of storage-defined network solution for those different platforms that aren't just VMware or Hyper-V, So I think this is where you're growing. And the other thing that I noticed, and I don't talk about net promoter scores very often, but I think the fact that you had a 92% net promoter score shows that your customers are very happy with you. So what you talked about in terms of that service, there's the bet that you talked about, and it's coming off really well. So that's kudos. We might just wrap up. I want to ask a couple of questions. And I think we've heard about a little bit about the architecture, why you guys started it, but what do you think was your core innovation and how you, disrupted that market initially when you came out?
So it comes down to focus. So there were other scale out SDS solutions coming out at around the same time, and even after Storpool was founded, and then they disappeared, right? So focus on what the customer actually needs instead of what others are focusing on. So the focus on, instead of focusing on, how do we make a quick exit of the startup, right?
Yep.
Which is the general way of thinking in storage startups, we were focusing on how do we deliver the most value to these. Every customer is a valued customer to these early customers of Storpool.
Yeah.
So this is how we started. We're trying to keep it. I'd say we lost that edge for a couple of years, 2 or 3 years back. But we're now back on focusing on user requirements and focusing on solving problems for customers instead of can we get more IOPS?
Yeah.
Do they need more IOPS?
I think that's good. And I think it goes back to what you talked about around the fact that you weren't heavily VC funded. So you're not at the behest of anyone to have a quick exit or for people to get their money back. And you're focusing on what what's pure and what great technology companies should be about, which is solving a problem. And you know, you were a great example of that, because you were working on something, you pivoted to something which you thought was more of a pertinent issue to solve. So you pivoted the company, and you've had great success over the past 10 years plus doing that. So I think it's very admirable that you're willing to sort of say that as being the core, you know, founding ethos of the company, as opposed to saying that we're just going for a quick exit. It's very refreshing, especially in the storage world. So well done on that. And it's reflective of your success, I think, as well. All right. So I think with that, we'll wrap up. It's been a great conversation. Again, I love going back and talking about storage, because like we talked about, I've had so much pain personally dealing with storage companies, some good, but majority pain. And I always say that I would have probably liked to have grown up more in this era of storage, as opposed to when I grew up, which was going through some serious pain points. And, you know, I think I'm gray and losing my hair for a reason. So it was probably because of storage. So all good. So with that, I just want to say that if you aren't subscribed to Great Things Are Great Tech and you want to appear on the show, please again, click on the link on the show notes. We're going to link to a lot of the store pool notes in the show notes. So we'll link to your website, to a lot of the communications that you guys have, your YouTube channel, everything like that. So please click on the show notes and view that. And with that, I'd like to thank Boyan for being on the show, and we will see you next time on Great Things with Great Tech.
Yep.